Welcome to the June 2025 News Bulletin podcast for commercial shipping marine surveyors, put together by the International Institute of Marine Surveying. We open our podcast with an introduction from IIAMS CEO Mike Schwartz. Dear colleague, it may have passed you by, but there seems to have been a string of eye-catching large yacht fires erupting since the start of 2025 with devastating consequences. So, what is behind this surge in large yacht fires and is it acceptable? Of course not, and it is not yet entirely clear, are the simple answers. Whilst the reason of a boat fire is not always known instantly, lithium-ion batteries are said to have been the cause of one devastating fire in Marseille in January, which kick-started this unwelcome run of boat fires. The fire in question destroyed Nashka 4 and spread to two nearby yachts. The second yacht was also a total loss, while the third sustained severe damage to her portside. Oil booms were deployed to mitigate the environmental harm. Who knows what the final cost to insurers will be, once the dust settles. But this incident started an alarming trend. Also in January, a 29-meter Princess yacht was destroyed in a blazing inferno. The vessel was allegedly chartered by the renowned hip-hop producer Metro Boomin, unknown to me I must confess, who was not on board at the time. The Miami-Dade Fire Department mobilized more than 30 units, including ground crews and rescue boats, to contain the growing fire. However, the yacht eventually took on too much water and capsized into the river. Two further major fires occurred during March. The 29.63-meter Azimut motor yacht Ramonda was destroyed in the Portanovi Resort Marina in Montenegro. The images are horrific and very little remains of the vessel, just a charred and burnt-out hulk from what I can see. The local police force managed crowd control and supported the operation, whilst firefighter units worked to extinguish the fire. However, according to reports, the fire could not be contained on site. That same month, three yachts were destroyed following a marina fire in northwest Miami-Dade County, Florida, on the Miami River. According to local reports, authorities arrived at the scene to discover all three yachts ablaze. Firefighting efforts ensued from both shore and sea, with the fire extinguished 3 hours later by using foam techniques. Two of the affected vessels were below 24 meters, with the other confirmed to be the 30.8-meter Rodman yacht Nirvana. And then in April, a massive fire erupted on a yacht in Fethiye's Karagözler Marina in Turkey. Firefighting teams from Fethiye and Seydikme initially responded but were unable to contain the flames. Arriving swiftly at the marina, emergency crews worked intensively to control the fire, but it seems they could not prevent it from spreading to other nearby boats. Actual facts about the incident are sketchy. Eyewitnesses stated that one of the burning yachts had recently been launched and was a relatively new vessel. There have been other serious yacht fires too in recent months. So, what are we to make of this situation, which seems to be setting a rather worrying trend? The intensity and severity of these fires is also of concern. It is remarkable that, to the best of my knowledge, there were no deaths or injuries reported. I am keen to hear comment from insurers who, frankly, must be tearing their hair out. Once again, these cases highlight the continuing spate of fires affecting the yachting industry with seemingly no let-up. While it could certainly be argued that these fires are perhaps disproportionately reported due to social media, the rate of total losses caused by such incidents is actually increasing. Until the industry identifies and addresses the root causes of yacht fires, it seems inevitable that such incidents will probably persist and only grow in volume and severity. Enclosed space deaths remain a concern. You may be aware that the subject of enclosed space deaths is something that I became passionate about when I started my career with IIMS more than a decade ago. My interest in this topic remains undiminished, not least as it is still a major problem more than 10 years on and claiming lives. Little has changed, it appears. I have said it before and will repeat it again: no one should leave home and not come back alive that evening because they perished in an enclosed space. So, it was with genuine interest that I read an article recently about the fourth enclosed space entry, Joint Industry Workshop. A working group drawn from maritime organizations gathered earlier this year to identify measures to reduce or eliminate deaths in enclosed spaces on board vessels. I would encourage you to read the short article and to keep abreast of this important subject, which could unwittingly affect any surveyor. Read the article online, called Industry Majors Discuss Enclosed Space Entry Safety, which you can find at Safety 4C. Part of my job, which I really enjoy, is meeting marine surveyors wherever in the world they may operate. Whilst there are different maritime regulations in place across the globe, Most surveyors I have met are faced with the same challenges and issues and have a shared and burning desire to keep those at sea, plus the valuable assets and cargoes safe. Over the past few weeks, I have met surveyors in Baltimore, Ireland, Cornwall, UK, and most recently in Palma. Being able to network and share knowledge is invaluable. I am pleased to announce dates for my planned trip to New Zealand and Australia in July. For now, please save the dates. More details about the event schedules can be found in this news bulletin. But for now, I can confirm I am hosting an event on Friday afternoon 11th of July 2025 in Auckland and a two-day event in Brisbane the following week on 17th, 18th of July 2025. All are welcome to attend and both events will be open to in-person and online delegates. I am keen to showcase the work of IAMS and to introduce you to a range of knowledgeable and experienced speakers. Watch this space. Just before I close, you may recall that in my April News Bulletin introduction I gave you my forthright opinion on the shocking recent safety record of the Egyptian dive boat Liverboard Sector resulting in multiple boats sinkings and deaths. The thoughts and concerns I expressed brought my biggest post bag ever. I am grateful to those who have commented on this unacceptable situation. I have chosen to publish a response from Miku Bati, with his permission. He has had some direct involvement in this sector and his message published in this news bulletin is essential reading. Survey well, Mike Schwartz. We have an important notice for our first segment. Our IAMS annual general meeting is taking place on the 3rd of June at 2 p.m, London, UK time. It is being broadcast live via Zoom from the IAMS, HQ offices, and all are welcome to join. For more information, visit www.iams.org.uk/events. We also have an event in Australia this summer. It is some years since IAMS hosted a live event in Australia. IAMS CEO, Mike Schwartz, is hosting the two-day event in person on the 17th and 18th of July at the Novotel Brisbane Airport Hotel. Members and non-members are invited to attend. If you are unable to make the seminar in person, there is an option for distant delegates to join the event online via Zoom. And the third option is to purchase the video content, which will be available to all delegates, to be released after the event. You can find out more at www.iams.org.uk/events. Alternatively, please contact Vicky Loisides at IAMSHQ by email at education@iams.org.uk. Our next segment on this year's SeaWork event. Once again, it is almost time for the three-day, popular annual SeaWork show taking place at Southampton, UK from the 10th to the 12th of June. IAMS has had a stand at this event for many years, and the team enjoys being present at the event, meeting members as well as others from the workboat industry. You can find the IAMS booth as part of the much larger Workboat Association's bigger stand. If you are at the show, you are most welcome to come and say hello. Up next, the UK Marine Accident Investigation Branch has published its first Safety Digest of the year. Safety Digest 1-2025 draws the attention of the marine community to some of the lessons arising from investigations into recent accidents and incidents. This information is published to inform the merchant and fishing industries, the recreational craft community and the public of the general circumstances of marine accidents and to draw out the lessons to be learned. The sole purpose of the Safety Digest is to prevent similar accidents happening again. In his introduction, Chief Inspector of Marine Accidents, Andrew Moll OBE, highlighted to the recent collision between container vessel Solong and tanker Stena Immaculate, pointing out it appeared to be yet another collision that should not have happened. He added that a good lookout is key to preventing collisions, Colreg's Rule 5, and also that standalone vessels should ready to take avoiding action when necessary, Rule 17. The digest also featured introductions by Gary Doyle, Group Harbour Master of Peel Ports Group, Anne Hornigold, Director of Whitby and District Fishing Industry Training School, and Mark Bleeker, Director of MB Marine, who contributed their expert insights to this safety digest. You can read the report at iams.org.uk/news. Up next, the Tokyo MOU has released its annual report 2024, which conducted 32,054 inspections, which is four times the number of inspections undertaken three decades ago. The Tokyo MOU noted that the detention rate has decreased 0.6 percentage points in 2024. Continuous attention and emphasis needs to be paid as the level of detentions is still higher than that of the pre-pandemic period and almost the same level as that of 10 years before. Furthermore, in 2024, the number of underperforming ships are nearly double that of the previous year, which indicates the condition of ships in the region is becoming worse. An analysis of recorded deficiencies detentions has not revealed any specific area as the primary cause of this situation of non-compliance. Serious concerns have been raised by the Tokyo MOU regarding cases of improper conduct of certain flag states and recognized organizations, such as extending the validity of certificates in violation of limitations imposed by the relevant conventions, accepting and/or approving unjustified equivalent arrangements, and the conduct of remote surveys that were not in line with the IMO guidelines and ineffective from a safety and environmental protection point of view. A total of 77,526 deficiencies were recorded in 2024. Fire safety measures, life-saving appliances, working and living conditions, and safety of navigation continue to be the major categories of deficiencies discovered on ships. In 2024, 15,406 deficiencies related to fire safety measures, 10,263 deficiencies related to life-saving appliances, 8,193 deficiencies related to working and living conditions, and 8,066 deficiencies related to safety of navigation were recorded, representing 54% of the total number of all recorded deficiencies. You can read the full report at tokyo-mou.org. Next, the International Maritime Organization has issued the interim guidelines for the safety of ships using ammonia as fuel, marking a significant milestone in regulatory support for alternative fuels. BIMCO has actively participated in all aspects of the work contributing to these guidelines and to the development of future mandatory provisions. The interim guidelines provide a goal and function-based safety framework covering ship design, equipment, operations, bunkering, toxicity mitigation, and crew protection. While the guidelines are non-mandatory, they align closely with the IGF Code and SOLAS principles, offering administrations and industry stakeholders a consistent reference point as ammonia-fueled projects emerge. The guidelines aim to ensure that ammonia-fueled systems offer at least the same level of safety and reliability as conventional oil-fueled machinery, recognizing ammonia's specific hazards, including high toxicity, potential for explosive atmospheres, and material compatibility challenges. They encourage early uptake while noting that further refinements will be necessary as operational experience is gained, particularly in relation to toxicity controls and emergency systems. Read the full interim guidelines bimco.org/news-insights. In our next report, the U.S. National Transportation Safety Board has recommended that land-based firefighters be better prepared for marine vessel firefighting following a fatal fire on the Conroe vessel Grande Costa d'Avorio in Newark, New Jersey, on 5 July 2023. The ship was docked at Port Newark when a vehicle used by shoreside workers to push used vehicles onto the vessel caught fire on an interior garage deck. The ship's captain ordered use of the vessel's CO2 extinguishing system, but the crew were unable to close a large rampway door because the control panel was located inside the fire protection zone, where the CO2 would be released. The lack of operating controls on the outside of the door prevented the crew from safely closing the door and directly led to the ineffectiveness of the fire extinguishing system, contributing to the fire's duration and severity. Two land-based firefighters died while attempting to put out the fire. Six additional emergency responders were injured during the firefighting and rescue operations. The damage to the vessel was estimated to be over $23 million. The NTSB found that directing firefighters to enter the area where the CO2 extinguishing system had been activated, contrary to General Marine Firefighting Convention, exposed firefighters to additional and unnecessary risk. The Newark Fire Division was also not adequately prepared to respond to a vessel fire and lacked marine vessel firefighting training. Investigators found the vessel fire resulted from the overheated transmission fluid of the pusher vehicle, which boiled over and ignited on a hot engine surface. The pusher vehicle was a passenger vehicle, and not suitable for use as a power industrial truck because it did not meet Occupational Safety and Health Administration standards for a power industrial truck. The final report is expected to be published on the NTSB's website soon. Up next, Windcoop has officially announced the launch of the construction of the world's first sail-powered container ship at the RMK Marine Shipyard. The ship will measure 91.3 meters in length and will be propelled by three rigid wings, each measuring 350 meters squared, designed by computed wingsail. This design is expected to reduce CO2 emissions by 60% compared to conventional cargo ships. The project stands out not only for its technological advancements but also for its unique funding model. Over 1,600 citizen shareholders have contributed, alongside key shippers such as RKDSA, Valrhona, Prova, and ETHIQUABLE. Impact-driven financial partners, including LANEF, Citi, Merinvest, and others, have also supported the initiative. To date, €6.8 million has been raised in equity, with the total project valued at €28.5 million. The first route will connect France with Madagascar, including ports in Tamatave, Diego Suarez, and Majunga. Windcoop is already studying the construction of a second ship to ensure monthly service and is exploring new routes to further expand its environmental and social impact. In our next story, the UK Marine Accident Investigation Branch has released an interim report on the fatal collision between the container ship Solong and the oil chemical tanker Stena Immaculate. One of Solong's crew has never been found and is presumed to have died in the incident, which took place 14 nautical miles northeast of Spurn Head at the entrance to the Humber Estuary, England, on the 10th of March 2025. The report has revealed that neither ship had a dedicated lookout on the bridge. You can read the interim report at iims.org.uk. Next, a product tanker operated by Odfjeth has finished a near-zero carbon transit of the North Atlantic, demonstrating the cost-effectiveness of sail power and biofuel. Bow Olympus just completed a voyage from the US Gulf Coast to Terneuzen, powered by four suction sails and a bunker stem of 100% biofuel in her tanks. Without even paying the steep cost of electrofuels, the tanker met both fuel EU maritime targets for 2050 and IMO direct compliance carbon targets for 2044, decades ahead of time. The unexpectedly high power of Bow Olympus suction sails helped make it possible, Odfjeth said. The 72-foot sails have driven fuel consumption down by as much as 40% in the best wind conditions, and 15 to 20% in good, but not perfect conditions, according to Odfjeth VP of Technology Erik Hjortland. That translates to 5 tons of fuel saved per day, equivalent to a reduction of 15 tons of CO2 emissions per day, he said. For our next segment, in 2023, the global soybean market was valued at over $200.37 billion, and it is projected to grow to $259 billion by 2032, says Brooks Bell. The shipping industry plays a significant role in supporting this global industry, but behind these impressive figures lies a perilously narrow window for safe ocean transport. Despite being loaded in sound condition and carried by well-maintained vessels on unexceptional voyages, soybeans continue to arrive in a deteriorated condition far too often. Claims related to spoilage frequently run into millions of dollars, exposing shipowners, operators, and marine insurers to significant financial risk. Brooks Bell covers why soybean claims are becoming so frequent, plus why they are more susceptible to self-heating than other grain and oilseed cargoes, as well as advice for shipowners on how they can effectively manage the risk of spoilage in transit. You can read the article at brooksbell.com. In our next story, port state control inspections are a fact of life in the maritime world, and they're getting tougher. With rising detention rates, unpredictable inspection criteria, and mounting pressure on crew performance, preparing for a PSC visit can feel like navigating a minefield, says Kaiko Systems. In 2024 alone, over 73,000 PSC inspections were conducted globally, with a growing detention rate now over 3%. For vessel operators, a failed inspection can mean costly detentions, delayed cargo, reputational damage, and a hit to operational performance. Despite the stakes, PSC preparation is still largely manual. Many ship operators rely on generic checklists, emails, spreadsheets, and time-consuming back and forth between ship and shore. This disjointed process places a huge burden on already stretched crews and leaves little room for proactive action. It also increases the likelihood of human error, missed deficiencies, and, ultimately, detentions. That's why Kaiko Systems and Risk4C have joined forces to launch a dynamic, mobile-first digital solution, designed from the ground up to help crews and shore teams take control of PSC preparation. This joint solution combines Kaiko Systems' advanced data collection and frontline intelligence platform with Risk4C's deep database of prioritized PSC risks, offering a fully tailored and predictive approach to port inspection compliance. You can find out how it works and why it matters on the news page of our website. Up next, the United States Coast Guard's Office of Commercial Vessel Compliance has released the U.S. Port State Control Annual Report for 2024. The report said in 2024, a total of 11,273 individual vessels from 79 different flag administrations made 84,034 port calls to the US. 8,710 PSC exams were conducted. These exam numbers increased over the 2023 total of 8,278. The total number of ships detained in 2024 for environmental protection, safety, and security-related deficiencies decreased from 101 to 82. You can read the full report at iamsusa.com. For our next story, Britannia Pier Nightclub has published loss prevention guidance on the consequences that need to be considered regarding hull fouling. Hull fouling has both direct and indirect impacts on a ship's performance. The most immediate effect is the increase in hull friction, reducing the ship's hydrodynamic efficiency, which leads to increased resistance as the ship moves through water, requiring more power and fuel to maintain speed. Higher fuel consumption reduces fuel efficiency and significantly increases operating costs for shipowners. Additionally, hull fouling can negatively impact speed performance, potentially leading to performance claims due to failure to meet charter party speed and consumption warranties. You can read the guidance at britanniapni.com/knowledge under the topic of loss prevention. In our next segment, from the 1st of January 2026, the use or storage of extinguishing media containing perfluorooctane sulfonic acid, PFOS, will be prohibited according to North Standard P&I Club. This decision reflects amendments made to SOLAS Chapter 2-2, Part C, Regulation 10. Vessels currently using firefighting media containing PFOS should arrange to replace existing stock in a timely manner. All replacement firefighting media should be ordered and ready for use on board, and old non-compliant foam properly disposed of, no later than the date of the first survey after the 1st of January 2026. For vessels using a FFF bulk systems containing PFOS, it will be necessary to clean the tanks and systems to ensure all residues of PFOS are removed. Vessels unsure if their foam contains PFOS should have a sample tested by a specialized laboratory. Furthermore, replacement firefighting media must be approved and certified in accordance with relevant IMO guidelines. The approval certificate should clearly indicate that the media is free of PFOS. Any old firefighting media containing PFOS must be delivered to appropriate shore-based reception facilities for safe and environmentally responsible disposal. Vessel crew should coordinate with port officials to ensure proper disposal ahead of the regulation deadline. You can read the article at north-standard.com. Next, debris in an engine's lube oil system led to a diesel engine failure and an engine room fire aboard a passenger vessel docked in Portland, Maine, the National Transportation Safety Board said. The passenger vessel Ocean Navigator was moored at the Ocean Gateway Terminal on October 18, 2023, when the number 2 auxiliary diesel generator engine suffered a catastrophic mechanical failure that seriously injured one crew member and resulted in an engine room fire. Crew members secured ventilation to the engine room, and the fire self-extinguished. None of the 128 passengers on board were injured, and no pollution was reported. Damage to the vessel was estimated at $2.4 million. You can read the full report at ntsb.governor. For our next story, the Mediterranean Sea officially became an emission control area under MARPOL Annex 6 on the 1st of May 2025. The sulfur content in fuel oil for ships operating in the area is now limited to 0.1%, significantly reducing air pollution and delivering major benefits to both human health and the marine environment. Ships operating in emission control areas for sulfur oxides and particulate matter, such as the Mediterranean Sea, are now subject to strict mandatory measures to prevent, reduce, and control air pollution. This new ECA must comply with stricter sulfur content limits than those set by the global standard, 0.10% mass by mass, compared with 0.50% mass by mass allowed outside of ECAs. And for our final report, the first MO Marine Environment Protection Committee recently held its 83rd session. The IMO MEPC is where the reduction of shipping's impact on the marine environment is discussed. MEPC oversees the work of several subcommittees and influences subjects which cut across the work of several committees, covering many key regulations. You can download the summary report at on the Lloyd's Register website. That's all we have for this month. Thanks for listening.